This week's episode of Ear Biscuits is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio.
I'm into professional websites. I'm not into amateur websites. I used to be all about amateur websites, but then I started realizing that they weren't effective, and I have moved up to professional websites.
It's not even possible to create an amateur website at Squarespace.
No, it's not. It is all professional.
Even when it's amateur, it's professional.
Even if what you do and what you're advertising or displaying on your online portfolio or website is amateur, it'll look professional. That's just kind of how it works. You can try it out for free without even entering your credit card information. And once you're convinced that the site is great, you can make sure you get 10% off by using the offer code RANDL. That's Randall. That's like Rhett and Link. Get it? RANDL.
But Rhett is really tough to spell. It's open to interpretation.
So is Link.
We just came up with the code RANDL.
People use a C in Link all the time for reasons I'm not aware of.
Squarespace.com, offer code RANDL. Now it's time for an Ear Biscuit. Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. It's time for another conversation with someone interesting from the internet.
This week we have Chester C. We talked to him about his journey from Disney Channel host to shirtless bartender.
We also get into his love life, from living through the rejection of his first crush to crying on stage at VidCon in the aftermath of his breakup with Taryn Southern, another YouTuber.
I mean, it kind of gets gossipy.
A little bit, yeah.
We talk about, we try to find out who his new crush is because this person does exist.
Hmm.
This is a gossipy episode of Ear Biscuits.
And you may know, you know, Chester is he's definitely got a reputation for being a ladies' man. And the thing he's known most for is his music.
Well, and to be just to have a fair clarification there, as a ladies' man, in terms of being a performer, not like hey, we as friends with Chester C. privately. This dude's known as a ladies' man.
No, I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not saying a player. I'm saying that. You know, he's a guy who...
He writes songs
that
the ladies
love. Songs. Yeah.
Love.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we're musicians. We write comedy songs. He's a musician. He writes mostly original love songs, very heartfelt love songs. I mean, just like the performance at VidCon, it was incredibly heartfelt. Well, it made me think, it unlodged a memory of mine. And that was...
It shook it loose.
Yeah, it was that, I was like, you know, I thought to myself... You know, I've never written a love song before, but then I was like, oh, I have written a love song. I wrote a love song to my wife.
What?
Right after we got married. Like very early. You know what? No, we were engaged. I wrote a song about her.
And I will tell you that this is something that I do not know about. You know, people talk about, but it is a question. Well, what's something that you guys don't know about each other?
Well, this
and
is one.
And is this because I'm the last person you'd want to tell this to because it's embarrassing. You would not come to work the next day or at the time.
Oh, come on. It's
hang
not
out
embarrassing.
With me. Yes, it is. Why haven't you told me?
Okay. Well, first of all.
Hey, man, I wrote a love song to my wife. Would you like to hear it?
Okay. So hold on now.
You never told me.
Yeah. But to just say that is by default embarrassing, that shows a gross misunderstanding of love and music, man. I mean, I'm a comedic songwriter, and so it's not typical, but it's not embarrassing.
I'm not saying you're embarrassed right now talking about it. I'm saying that there's a reason you kept this information from me.
The reason I kept information from you is because I kept the information from myself. I told you that it was a memory that was lodged in my brain that shook loose.
Why did you bury it?
No, well, because the performance of the song, which I'm going to tell you about in a second, is embarrassing in itself. The song, the fact that, you know, I had just fallen in love with my wife and I was a musician and I can play guitar and write a song and sing it, all those things made sense, and I still think they make sense. And you know what? I wish, honestly, and I'm sure my wife would agree with this, I wish that, again, in the past 12 and a half years of marriage, I would have written another one. And, you know, maybe you
yeah,
should be...
Yeah, it really begs the question. Why
maybe
have
you,
only you
should
written
write one. You should, maybe you should write a little song to your wife.
Oh, I write them all the time.
Yeah.
I just don't tell you about them because it's embarrassing.
Okay. So, I wrote a song, and you know, I honestly do not remember anything about the song except the chord progression. It was, I had my finger, it was a D fingering, and then like I played some different things with my pinky and kind of ran down through this like this D chord, and it was just kind of folky.
So
and,
basically, Tom Petty's Free Falling.
No, but it was a different little progression there. But I wrote this song for, and you know, she loved it. Of course, you know,
there's a young girl.
No, it was an original.
Married to me,
and so I performed this song for her, and she loved it, and. I don't know why. This is the embarrassing part. I know this is my idea. I told her family, her mom and her dad and her sister.
Okay, you told them.
No, I told them I wanted to perform the song. I wanted them to listen to me sing the song.
What?
To her with them there.
Oh, man. That is embarrassing.
Now this... My face is getting a little red right now because...
So is mine. This is weird.
Because this is... You know me, and this is
Dude,
the kind of thing...
I am so embarrassed for you. I can't believe that you would do this.
This is not the kind of thing that
I do. I'm so glad I wasn't there.
Because I avoid embarrassment like the plague.
Why would you do that?
Because I was young. I was in love.
You were married, right?
No.
You were dating. You had to have been dating.
You know what?
No man who's already married his wife would do this.
We must have been engaged. I don't know. I need to talk to my wife about the specific details.
I think you were trying to get engaged is what it must have been.
Well, it worked. You know, I've been married for a dozen years.
Desperate times.
I got two children with this lady.
I mean,
it worked.
I hope that you were trying to get engaged. Okay. We need to redeem this. So,
hey, listen, man, this is it's about to get more embarrassing
than this.
Yeah, right.
Oh gosh.
So
I can't believe this.
This is going to surprise a lot of people who listen because everybody thinks, you know, because you know, in as I am being entertaining and you know trying to be funny and you know I don't have the reputation as a sensitive person, right? And I'm not really sensitive in the traditional sense of the word. But when it comes to things like, a lot of people wouldn't, if most of the mythical beasts out there had to guess who would cry more in a movie, they would probably pick you, right? Well, yeah. The fact is I cry like a baby at movies, and I've never seen you cry at a movie, and I've watched lots of movies.
Why are you making this about me?
No, but I'm just saying that, like, there are certain things that I'm really sensitive about. I performed this song for my wife's family, and I started crying.
What? No!
I swear to you.
I can't believe this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I cannot be your friend.
First of all, I think this is winning a lot of new fans out there, just between me and you.
Listen, man, don't show your hand. Don't tell them you're winning fans and you're making this up.
I'm not making it up. So I begin to weep, not like open weeping, having to stop performing, but
wow,
I wept a little bit, man. But first of all, I mean, it totally sealed the deal. I mean, my in-laws.
Oh,
were
now
like,
you're sure?
No, my in-laws it was were like, "This is great," and my sister-in-law was like, "You've got to marry this guy."
A second ago, you didn't even remember if it was before you were married or not.
Because
now you're trying to redeem it.
No, it's because I'm very selfless. It must just be because I'm. It was so much about my wife, and it wasn't. Honestly, I don't know why I don't remember it well, but I do remember. It's one of those things that you think about, and you're like, I mean, first of all, I'm kind of old. We're old, if you haven't noticed, and I've been married for over a decade. There's a lot of memories. My wife and I talk about the early stages of our relationship. She's like, "Do you remember that?" And I'm like, "No, I don't. I'm sorry," but this is one of those things. It was kind of like a dream. And then when we started talking about Chester and what he does and the love
songs,
it dislodged. It's crazy. What other kind of embarrassing things I wonder that I might dislodge during doing this ear biscuit
thing? This is like therapy for you, huh?
Yeah.
I think you gained a glimpse into what it's like to be Chester C.
Yeah, that's what it was. So let's get to our conversation with the one and only Chester C. And we've already mentioned that this guy sings a lot of songs on the internet and has won the hearts of a lot of teen girls out there. He's got over 1 million subscribers on his Chester C YouTube channel.
He also stars in and produces Awesomeness TV's hit series Side Effects and is a co-founder of the premium content channel Yum Yum F and joins Grace Helbig, Hannah Hart, and Mamrie Hart in the feature film Camp Dakota. Here it is, our convo with Chester C. So which part of your name is made up? The C or the Chester?
I kid you not.
And honestly, I don't even know why I'm asking that.
You know,
about the last name C to me is like, okay, that's too elegant to be real.
I think it was 2 days ago. Grace needed my full name for something, right? And she had to double check. She said, she texted me, she's like, hey, seriously, is your last name really C? Not trying to be a dick or anything, just.
Yeah.
Just.
And here I am doing the same thing.
So what part of your name is me?
Is it the Chester? Because that's a pretty nerdy name. Yeah. You know my middle name, right?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's the man that you have on the mug upstairs.
Lionel?
Yeah. Chester Lionel C.
Oh, look over here. Look, we got a whole shrine to Lionel.
He's on
right
this
there.
Mug.
Right? So, he's everywhere.
Okay, so hold on. This is big news to us.
It's big news.
How do you have Lionel? Are you named after Lionel?
No, named after my grandpa. But
was his name Lionel?
Cool. Yeah.
That's okay. How grandpa.
Didn't that make sense?
Lionel, yeah.
I would have given anything for that.
Yeah, right? He already left this world before I was born, but he was born in 1899. Isn't that crazy?
Really?
He fought in World War I, World War II, and Korea, apparently, as a Marine.
Wow.
That's a weird world I don't know anything about.
Grandpa Lionel.
I wish he was alive so I could talk to him.
Quite a life.
So he's like a mythological being to you. Like, mm-hmm. He fought in these wars. You never met him.
He'd probably hate me. He'd probably hate me. Because we're not real men anymore. No one's real. There's no, like, real men. You know, he comes from the real men era.
Yeah,
He'd be confused. Like, you're very feminine.
So was his last name C? Was this on your dad's side?
Yes. Yeah.
So for the record, C is real.
C is real.
Yeah. But you don't go by Lionel.
Yeah. Did you ever think about, you know, going into an entertainment career that, hey, Chester Lionel, Chester Lionel?
I thought about CC. I thought no.
There's one of those.
You know, Chester and Lionel, I think, are equally. If you're writing a script and you need to make sure one of the characters is a nerd, you can choose either one of those names.
I just think of Lionel Richie. Yeah, so as a singer.
But I don't want to follow in Lionel's footsteps. Right? I want to be.
I mean, yeah, you do have more of an opportunity for originality. I mean, are there other Chester musicians?
There's Chester Bennington, who lead singer of Linkin Park.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. The cool thing about Chester or Lionel, I could have done this. I could have Madonna'd it. And just taken that last name off because it's unique enough. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you could pull that off. You can't do it with Brad. You can't be like, I'm just going to go by Brad. Like, you know, well,
if
this is going
to
be confusing.
If you did that, I think you would have to spell it with an A, not an ER. So it'd be
Chester?
Like Chester.
I like that, yeah. Yeah.
That could have worked.
Yeah. And it's not too late.
You could still do that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I was in middle school, I was really upset because this one kid ate a lot of Flamin' Hot Cheetos and he got the nickname Cheeto and I thought it was so cool. But I also really liked Flamin' Hot Cheetos and my name is Chester and I thought I had it, you know, I was more deserving of the nickname and I still think about that.
Cheeto Chester.
We can call you Cheeto for the...
whatever you want, really. Okay, so let's... where were you born?
Born in Northern California, Fairfield. It's like pretty much between San Francisco and Sacramento. On I-80, not the 80, because it's not L.A.
San Francisco, you actually Sacramento.
Say the I, yeah, like yeah. Back home, it's I-40, it's not the 40.
Yeah, we really put some weight on those freeways out here.
Yeah, so is this like a flat desert area, or when you get that far north?
Well, the adjacent city is called Vacaville, which is Cowtown, Dixon. There's a lot of cows. My best friend had a barn raising. Now, it's not like that. I mean, it wasn't like farms, but there were a lot of farm areas and
your best friend got his friends over and they built his barn.
His dad, yeah. So my dad went over and we all went over and we helped build this barn. He had a goat, ram, llamas.
A ram?
Yeah, that thing was crazy. In fact, they lived right next to my elementary school and I distinctly remember more than once an announcement over the PA system that said, you know, Elaine or Trevor, this is his sister, can you please report to the office? Your sheep are on the grounds again.
Field.
Yeah, exactly.
The sheep are out again.
Yeah, your cow is running around the field, yeah.
So this is small town, Northern California.
Yeah, it's not too small. I mean, it's got a little bit of a population to it, but it's, you know, it's nothing like that.
Not too big for there not to be city. Sheep.
Yeah.
And at recess.
Exactly. That's still happening. Yeah.
You have any siblings?
One older sister.
Okay.
She's awesome.
How much older?
She's cool. She is three and a half, four years older.
Okay. So. And your parents, are they still together?
Yeah, they're doing it. They're still doing the marriage thing.
They're still doing it, huh?
Yeah, lame.
No. What are they up to? What do they do?
They I don't know what they do. They're my mom's kind of just chilling now, relaxing a little bit. My dad still works on radar. He was in the military, he was in the Navy, and he worked on radar when he was in the military. So now he works as a civilian, but still for the military.
Okay.
Yeah, they do a lot of that. They live out in Palmdale, so I get to see them.
They moved closer.
Yeah.
Being a Navy kid, did that mean moving around as a kid? Or?
It didn't for me, because he would end up just having to go on these, you know, 6 month, you know, tours, or at one point he had to leave for Philadelphia for a couple of years, and you know, instead of us moving with him, we actually just kind of made that work.
Oh.
So yeah, I didn't have to move much, but. But yeah, typically a Navy brat is usually running around all parts of the world.
Now, your mom is Filipino, right? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like growing up in two cultures? How did they meet? Was it during one of his military?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So he was in the Philippines. He was stationed over there, and then they met. They got married in about, I think they knew each other for 3.5-4 months. And
that's not a long time.
No, and they've been together for, what, going... 36, 37 years now, 38 years. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So he brought her up here. What was it like growing up in that environment with the, was it two different cultures type of thing, or?
It was, my mom has become so Americanized at this point. I mean, she still has the accent. I was going to try to do a bad Filipino accent. I stopped myself.
Yeah, impersonate your mom.
But the nice thing is, because I'm half Filipino, I feel like I have the that's not racist card. If I stick to that race specifically, I can get away with that. But but it's bad. I'm not good at doing the accent. It just comes off like Mrs. Swan or something. It's not even close to a real accent of any sort.
Okay.
I remember eating a lot of weird foods and
What's the Filipino stereotype? I don't know.
I think the stereotype is they like karaoke. They love karaoke.
Okay, is that true?
My mom likes karaoke.
Well, yeah. There you go.
I think this is a good stereotype. Maybe I think the Filipinos made this one up, but they're really good at dance and really good at singing. But you can't have good stereotypes. That's not fair, right? I feel like that's a Filipino made one. They're really good at things.
Well,
that's the stereotype.
The self-made stereotypes are, yeah.
Well,
are good.
You're more than a half good singer, so.
Oh, thanks.
Can you dance?
Okay. I can move. I'm more of a mover. Yeah. I don't know if it's called dance.
So your mom didn't teach you to dance. What was it like growing up? What was the day-to-day?
What was it like growing up? I don't know. I'm trying to thank you. What did I want to do? I wanted to be a pilot. Because Top Gun. So I wanted to be a fighter in the Navy. So that was probably, I think when I go back and I look at, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up, and you go to your childhood, you know, documents that your parents keep, it's always F-14 fighter pilot. It switched over to FA-18, you know, because of the military.
Right. Yeah. You were informed.
Yeah. But, and I wanted to go to Annapolis, and I wanted to do that whole thing. My best buddy did the barn raising. He actually did go to Annapolis, and
he followed through.
Yeah, he followed through. I was like, I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it.
So at what point did that start to shift?
I ended up going to, I went to UCLA and I studied acting when I was there.
UCLA, you said? Okay.
And so I fell in love with the arts, and I looked into the military. They didn't have a really good arts program. So there wasn't like a whole lot of opportunity to act in the military.
So what made you want to be an actor to get into the...
I fell in love with acting just after high school or near the tail end of high school. I don't know. There's just something fun about being something else for a little bit. And
but did you do like the school play thing? Or
no, I was a tennis player in high school.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my thing. My love for acting hit like near the end of high school, and I got really interested in it.
So you were like the jock. As much as a tennis player
jock. I don't know if a tennis player was a jock, but I definitely was the, like I was captain of our team. And
you were good.
I was, no, we were Division II school. So okay. I was good for Division II school, whatever that means. It means not good in any other Division I school. but yeah, I was that kid that was, you know, an hour early to school every day practicing serves. I loved tennis. Tennis was my thing.
Now, are you musical already? Or was that something that
you... Yeah, I've been playing piano since I was six.
Okay.
Writing songs since I was 10. So music has always been there. It's always been like a release for me, though. My parents never made me. I've never had lessons. My parents have never forced me to take. It was never work for me. So for me, it's always been a place to go when I'm stressed.
So there was a piano in the house, and yeah. You just started.
I was like, what
twinkling the ivories.
Yeah, exactly.
And or tickling,
both.
I mean, you can twinkle them if you want. I don't know how you twinkle them, but you
well,
can definitely tickle them.
That's what it sounds like. I pay for my kids to get lessons. Maybe what should I be telling them to teach themselves?
What should you tell your kids to teach themselves?
Yeah, because I don't want to pay for the...
Oh, how to teach yourself? How do you do it without having to pay for the lessons? Is that
yeah,
what you're getting at?
How did you do that?
I don't know. I just kept hitting the... You know what's funny? People, it seems it's a lot easier than people think. It really, really is. Yeah, I think of it this way. You know, you don't have to think much. I assume you can type.
Yeah.
yes.
But I took a class to learn how to type.
Sure, okay, but you get to the point where your mind doesn't have to think about where A is. Your pinky just goes, and you can just start going. It's the same thing, to an extent, with the piano. It's just translate your mind thinking of letters and your mind thinking of sounds. So I play by ear. So for me, I've got a pretty good grasp of what those keys are going to sound like and how I can put them in combinations.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most, you know, stripped down way of explaining myself.
But as a 10-year-old, you were instinctively kind of just going with this.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, wow, if you hit those keys together, they make this sound. And mm-hmm. then you play around. You're like, oh, if you do this, that sound.
And you were writing original songs.
Yeah,
at 10.
Yeah, because I started having crushes on girls.
And, love songs.
And I was like, yeah. And I remember Bryan Adams, Everything I Do It For You, was my favorite song. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to that on replay on my tape player because that's what we had. And I said, I want to write songs like that. I'm sure that guy gets a lot of girls.
How does that start? Look into my...
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'd rather hear Chester sing it, but, you know.
Go, Chester.
It's come so on. High. No, that's a high one. That's that. I don't want to scream in your mic.
Okay, so you're writing songs at age of 10 about other girls. Now, is this like serenading? Like, hey, baby, come over and sit on the piano kind of situation?
Yeah. I've been writing... And I still do. If you know, anyone that follows me knows, like, majority of my songs are love songs, and that's what always has always been done like really well for me. But I don't know, like Lionel Richie, man, same thing.
Tell us about the first girl that you remember having a crush on.
The first girl I actually remember her name. The first girl I remember actually having a crush on was this girl named Stephanie Standen. I'm throwing her name out there.
Stephanie Standen.
I'm never gonna see her or hear from this girl again. it's fifth grade.
Fifth grade.
She's listening. and she definitely didn't like me. I remember that.
Well, what was it that attracted you to her? Was she beautiful for a...
I think she was beautiful for a fifth grade. Wait, I gotta keep how I say this, right?
Well, you were in fifth grade.
Yeah, right. Don't take this out of context, guys.
Just put yourself back in those fifth grade shoes.
What do you remember
about
her?
I would think she was so pretty today. It would be different words.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure she's still great looking today.
Chester. Yeah, maybe.
She is listening.
I am single.
That's a good name, though, to have a crush on.
So what do you remember about her? Come on. I remember my first crush was Jennifer Pearson. She sucked her thumb in kindergarten. So did I.
Well, you started early.
And I was like, yeah.
Like, we got that in common.
That didn't sound right.
I see where you, yeah.
Not what I meant by that.
But we're all thinking it now, though, so thanks a lot. We might not have thought of it until you did that.
And yeah. She had a speech impediment because she sucked her thumb so much.
Oh, okay. That turned you on?
I just thought it was really cute. And I remember locking eyes with her one day at nap time.
And you put your thumb in your mouth.
And you're like, awesome.
I mean, so now it's your turn, Chester. Tell me more about Miss Standen.
I remember fourth or fifth grade, and when you're that age, you think things will impress girls. I still do, irrationally, or it's not logical to think these things, but I still do. You know, I remember thinking, if I can learn how to do a back handspring, she's totally gonna like me. You know, or if I can win the turkey trot, She's totally going to like me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those are two real things I recall specifically to her. I remember thinking that.
Did you learn any of those things or win the turkey trot?
I didn't. I do remember she was standing, you know, it took four laps around the field to do this turkey trot. And I remember being very cognizant that she was standing at one area, mm-hmm. and I would jog, you know, the whole piece, but then sprint by when she. Even though it didn't really make sense because I didn't come in her place well, so it was just like that's weird.
That gotta look good by Stephanie.
Never. Oh, I did learn the backhand spring. I did learn the backhand spring.
That didn't do it either.
No, I was really confused.
Was she going with somebody else?
No, and I do remember. You know, digging into it and trying to find out if she, you know, she thinks anything of me. I can't remember if this is true. Yeah, I can't remember if this is true, and I don't want to make it seem like she was a mean fifth grader, but I'm pretty sure she told another friend that I had a big head.
Hmm.
Yeah, like my body, I think it's true. I think when I was in fifth grade, I think my head started like faster than my body.
Yeah, that's common.
So I think she said something along the lines of like, when I was running, it looked like I might fall over or something like.
And that doing the turkey trot in front of her probably didn't help.
No, that, and I realized
that's
like,
when that's, she spotted it.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not.
Look at the size of the head.
She's staring at me. Hey, I actually am crushing on someone right now, and that's all I'll tell you.
That's unacceptable.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get to that point.
All right.
Okay. So you're obviously, we know that you're musically gifted. We know that that apparently started at a young age, but then it wasn't, hey, I'm going to go off to some school and major in music, or I'm going to just bypass school and be a musician. Mm-hmm. It was, I'm going to go and study acting.
Yeah.
So how did, were you thinking, oh, but music is always going to be a part of my life, or mm-hmm. like how is that working?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. I didn't know where I would go after college. I knew that I wanted to study acting. I really do appreciate acting as a craft, which is not the case for, I would say, most actors in LA, if I'm being honest. I have a different outlook on acting. I really do enjoy it. And I knew that I wanted to study music. I didn't know I would be an actor or that I would get involved in acting in the traditional sense or even that with music. I wasn't positive what I would do after college. I just knew at the moment I loved it and I wanted to study it. So, and then after college, I ended up landing a gig on the Disney Channel, and I was a host for a show called Disney 365 for 3 years. And that was...
So what kind of show was that with a host?
It's interstitial. So basically in between the programming, it would come on and I would interview like Miley Cyrus or Selena Gomez and you know... the High School Musical cast or whatever. So I would go to the red carpet events. It's kind of like a Ryan Seacresty kind of thing, but in the Disney world. And I had to be very, very, very energetic, even though I was already in my 20s. I'd be clean shaved, pretend I was 15, 16.
Okay.
And talk with a very high voice.
Did they tell you this? It was like, okay, this is who you have to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was
your
tough.
Voice needs to be higher right now, Chester. It's like in between takes, like bring it back up.
In between takes, they'd be like, more. We need more energy. We need up more energy. It was ridiculous. Have you ever seen it? I don't know if you've ever seen these things, but they're almost famous for being so ridiculously energetic. I'll give you a little taste. It's like, hey everyone, with all the info and all things Disney, 365 days a year, I'm Chester. Like that. That, you know,
right.
and
that's good.
And you got to maintain that.
That's like walking a tight wire.
Yeah. I would always warn the actors too.
That's wrapped that around your testicles or something.
Exactly. That's what it felt like. But it was, you know, it could be jarring for the person you're interviewing. So I distinctly remember like I had to interview Zac Efron at one point. And I was like, hey, I'm about to get really energetic. Just warning you.
You're not going to believe how high I'm about to talk.
It's all good.
And then, boom.
Yeah.
And
they're like, and you guys ready? I'm like, so Zach.
Yeah.
So three years of this.
3 years of that.
Three years, and this is pretty much a full-time thing at the time?
I don't know. It wasn't full-time, but it definitely supplied me. You know, it was a big portion of my income, and it was what I, you know, it was my job. I probably did one or two a month. And I was basically the main host for, you know, those 3 years.
So you're saying starting in 2006?
Ish. Yeah, 2006, 2007-ish. Yeah, 2006, 2009. Yep.
Okay.
And at what point in that process, because it sounds like you characterize it in a way now that You burned out at some point. Is that what happened? You're like, I can't take any more of this.
Well, this is silly.
Or your voice just couldn't stay that high.
I think it was a few things. I think it was honestly a part of it was my body. This is so silly. But
your body caught up with your head?
Finally? Well, in 2009, my body finally caught up with my head, yeah. But I got obsessed with just with lifting, and I blew up to a good ones. I don't know. I was like 175, 180 pounds. I'm not, you know, the biggest guy height wise, so that was pretty big. But it was, you know, I was a gym jerk. You know, jerk's not the right word. Yeah, I'm trying. You know what I'm getting.
Yeah,
at.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That guy for a period of time, really, really loved working out. So I blew up, and I remember them. You know, it was like two or three in a row. Like I could tell they were getting kind of upset because. They only put me in triple XL shirts because you can't be like you're not supposed to be a man. I'm supposed to be a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old.
You can't be swole.
Yeah.
You
can't be exactly. And I think one of the last ones I did was the cruise, and they're like they had to put me in a wetsuit. So they put me in literally a triple XL. So because you know those things are supposed to be tight and fitting. So it was like this like baggy looking wetsuit.
And they're not talking to you about this. They're just handing you clothes, yeah. And you're kind of reading between the lines.
Yeah, and then I stopped getting calls for more of those gigs. Yeah, but yeah,
he's too buff. He outbuffed us.
Well, at a certain point,
you outbuffed just like, Disney.
Yeah, I think that was the case.
But you didn't. But you wanted to move on, or you wanted to just be huge.
I didn't. I don't really enjoy hosting. I enjoy acting in roles that I, you know, certain roles I love acting in, love music. But hosting for me was just, it was a job. And yeah, you're right. I mean, after 3 years of doing it, it's like, okay, I should find something else to be doing here.
Are you trying to be a musician at the same time? Like, are you getting any traction at that time?
At the time, I was doing more songwriting. Actually, you know David Choi, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So David, I knew David before YouTube. And
how did you know him?
Because of songwriting. He was a writer, producer for Warner Chappell Publishing. And I, at the time, was working with some A&R over at Warner Brothers, and they paired us up
and
to
what
write
is that,
songs.
What does that mean exactly, Warner Music Publishing,
it's
whatever
a publishing
you
company.
Just said?
Warner Chappell is a publishing company, a music publishing company. And so, you know, they have the rights to tons of music. And he was signed to that company to write and produce songs.
For
other artists and whatnot, yeah. So we got together and we were a writing team for a little while. We just co-wrote a bunch of songs. And while we were doing that, that's when he showed me his YouTube channel. Mm. And he was like, if I remember correctly, he might have even been top 10. He was definitely up there. He was definitely high in the ranks.
Because David Choi had written...
YouTube song.
The YouTube song.
Yeah, the catapult.
When I wake up in the morning.
Oh, look at you.
YouTube.
Yep, yeah. You know it.
We were doing a live broadcast on Ustream every Thursday night called the Rhett and Link Cast, and we had a volunteer who would work via Skype. Her name is, I can't remember her name at this particular moment, but I'll remember it in a second. It'll be too late.
Mm-hmm. Stephanie.
Not Stephanie. It was the other girl.
Yeah.
But anyway, she said, you should get guests on your show. And we were like, okay, we'll try that. And you should get David Choi. And we were like, who's that? He's like, well, YouTube song. So then that's how we met David Choi.
When was that?
This was
2007
or 2008.
Wow.
And he performed the YouTube song live
that's
on
great.
Our show. You remember that?
Yeah, we did that live show for... almost 2 years straight.
It's great.
It's like way back then.
Yeah.
Not
David's
a whole
part
lot
of the original, like you guys. Oh, like, yeah. Part of the original crew, which I love, by the way, that I'm, now I wasn't excelling in the YouTube platform in 2007. I was, you know, much smaller in the ranks than anything, but I was there and I was watching Dax Flame and I was, you know, and I was uploading it. And I love that I was there because a lot of the you know, the original YouTube crew is still doing their thing. It's just kind of cool to see.
I won't say a lot, but I'll say some of the original people are still around.
Yeah.
A lot of people have fallen off, but.
Yeah. I wish Winecone was still like popular.
Well, you're going back to like first generation, like the first people.
Because David Choi was one of those people.
Yeah,
he was the tip top back then.
Because he was even earlier than we were, definitely.
So does that time out with when you were writing together, he was moving up the ranks of YouTube in 2006 is when you're talking about, 2007.
Yeah, I think we met in 2006, 2007, yeah, somewhere around that era. So, but yeah, and that's what got me on YouTube was David. David was like, you got to start a YouTube channel and get put your music out there and then see how it, you get some feedback. And I was like, that's super cool. And then it turned into what it is today.
And so what, you know, what was that process like? Like what was the, you know, first video?
First video was David holding my laptop, you know, basically babying me through this. So he's showing me what to do. Movie HD was the editor. And I don't know if you remember know this about David, but David was kind of known for putting way too many effects in all his videos via Movie HD. So it was like, what can you add in there now? Snow, lightning, you know, all those, the 20 effects that they had. Right. And so he held my laptop and recorded with a little eye, you know, camera and shaky. And I sang one of my songs called Goddamn You're Beautiful and put it up. That was it. And then, I just kept doing it. Never stopped.
Now we went back and watched that video, and there's some production to that video. It's not just a webcam video.
You're thinking of probably thinking of the actual music video.
Okay, so that was later.
Later, I made a music video for it.
Okay.
Yeah. No. So if you saw the first video I put up, it is coming out of an old Mac. Yeah. And he's holding the laptop as a camera.
He's holding
and trying to do some camera work to it, but it's not.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss those days. Hey, remember when flip cameras were hot for like a good 5 months?
Oh yeah.
And then it was like, it went, use your computer camera. You got to use flip. And then I was like, got to use the Canons. And now it's just, it's over. You can't.
So we never got a flip cam. We never,
you didn't?
We skipped that. Yeah,
I got involved in that. I thought I was going to buy 20 of them and start doing really cool things with flip cameras. I thought I was going to like put multiple flips up everywhere. And,
like in the Matrix, like do your version of the Matrix shots.
Yeah.
Jump up in the air and then go around yourself in every music video.
Sing a song.
Yeah.
So David got you going with the webcam, and then what? Was it just a slow grind kind of thing, or did something pop immediately? How did it work?
Slow grind for me. I don't have a viral video. I have a song, Goddamn You're Beautiful, continues to do pretty well for me. When I wrote Nice Guys, I wrote a song called Nice Guys Finished Last, or it's just called Nice Guys, and I had Ryan and Kev Jumba rap the rap parts. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that helped bring some awareness to my channel because those guys were, you know, I think Ryan was number two at the time or something like that.
Yeah.
Might have been number one.
Niga Higa. So yeah. You did you meet them through David?
Yeah, I met them through David is a connector, by the way. David connected a lot of people. And I met him. It was because of a show called Fun Employed, or a web series called Fun Employed that Wong Fu Productions was doing. And I played Duke on the show, and that's how I met those guys. And and I did that, and then the next year I did a song called Bromance with Ryan, and that did pretty well.
Yeah.
I think those two are my most viral. They're not on my channel, though. They're on Ryan's. But I think Nice Guys has over 50 million on just Ryan's channel. So I'm in it, so that helps. But those are the only videos that I would say went viral. For me, it's just been consistently being on the space.
After that first upload, you know, when you're like, okay, I'm going to make a music video for YouTube, I'm assuming that this wasn't like, hey, I'm going to quit my day job at this point. Like, what were you doing? How were you making money at the time?
Oh, how was I making money at the time? What era are we talking about? When the partnership program?
Like 2000, like when you first got started, when you were like...
There's no money, right, when we first started.
Right, mm-hmm. So you're working with David, you're co-writing, so he's got a day job at the time.
Warner Chappell.
You're right.
He was being paid, because he was actually signed by Warner Chappell.
Right.
For me, I was a shirtless bartender at a Korean club.
Shirtless bartender. Yeah, Korean
is that
club.
A euphemism?
No, that's a literalism.
So tell us how that works.
Well, first you take your shirt off.
Okay.
And then,
check.
And then you serve alcoholic beverages to people from behind a bar. It was really weird because for me, it was very Korean culture too. It was called a booking club. So the girls get in free. The guys all sit there and
the guys pay to get in.
They also have to pay for, you know, they'll buy tables, but they'll pull like a girl over and she has to come down and sit for them for a certain amount of time. It's kind of a weird scenario, but
like an escort.
I don't want to use the wrong words here.
There are no wrong words. I just want to understand.
Yeah, I don't really know. All I know is
escort the wrong word?
I don't know. I just, maybe, I'm not sure.
Were you an escort?
No.
Yeah. Are you?
No. I stayed behind the bar.
Did you ever have to take your pants off?
No. Never had to take the pants off.
Okay. Was every bartender shirtless?
The other guy was a shirt. Yeah. The girls worked there, but they weren't shirtless. They
right. Did you have like a bow tie on?
I wish I did. No.
You didn't have a shirt on.
And no. I love that you just said, no, the girls weren't shirtless. But it's funny how we say, that's when you say topless.
Yeah.
But for guys, we've been saying shirtless.
Shirtless, yeah.
Because you didn't want to apply topless to you as the bartender.
No, that's weird.
So you're a shirtless bartender, but if the women were shirtless, they would be topless.
Yeah, this is true.
But they weren't.
That's nice.
I just want to take a moment to acknowledge going from hosting Disney 365 to being a shirtless bartender. I mean, this is quite a transition.
Well, the muscles.
Did
they ask you to talk higher at the bar?
Here's your drink. I was going to give the traditional acting thing a go. It was for a short period of time. I hate the way the acting industry is set up. I do. There's just so much red tape and so many politics and so many things that have nothing to do with ambition and talent, and it's unfortunate. But I was a part of that game for a while, and to make sense of being part of that game, you have to find a job that opens your week up and opens your daytime up.
Yeah.
So for me,
opens your chest up.
Opens your chest up. Opens your heart up.
Well, listen, there's no shame in it. There's just a lot of fascination in it for me.
Okay, but I know that as we've gotten to know you just over the past year or so, we've known that you're more than just a guy who makes YouTube videos. I mean, you've gotten involved in the business of YouTube and some innovative things that are happening. So tell us a little bit about, beyond you're not just a guy who makes YouTube videos and has some songs on the internet. You're a guy that's, really on the cutting edge of what's happening with this transition in new media in general. So tell us a little bit about how that got started.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So as the tail end of this pursuit of acting came about, I realized that I didn't want the actual acting career or the music career as much as I thought I did. I just love music and I just love acting. But I don't want the career. And there's a big difference. And I think a lot of people don't realize the difference sometimes. And I was very fortunate to have that epiphany not too long ago. And once I did, it opened up all these fun new opportunities to be a little bit more business savvy and look into the business side of what's going on. And then because of what's happening on the internet, that was the really exciting stuff. Because as cliche as it is, it is still the Wild Wild West. And you can really just try new things. And so as YouTube is figuring out what's going on and you have all these companies pop up and, your instinct is, oh, well, those are such smart businessmen that are controlling this space and controlling these major companies. And you quickly realize they're not nearly as smart as you would assume they are. And they're not making the decisions that are necessarily the right ones. And it's almost shocking to when you figure that out and that you can be a player in this and you can actually be a pioneer. And once I figured that out, I wanted to try and do something myself.
So then what were the specific opportunities? How did you start making those connections into the business side of it?
The first thing that sort of introduced me to the business aspect of what was going on was ended up starting a company with a buddy Cash Warren and another buddy Abdul and Ryan and Kevin, and we were just brainstorming different ideas how we could take advantage of what was going on the internet and do something really cool and innovative. Blah, blah, blah. Fast forward, we were made aware of the funded channels.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go through this quickly. We reached out to Justin Lin, and we all came together and created a whole new company, and we ran the Yum Yum F Network, which was a funded channel. So being a part of that was a great sort of intro to a lot of stuff that was going on behind the scenes.
And how would you characterize that network?
It was, it's Asian American centric, Asian American vertical for YouTube. It's interesting because when YouTube launched all those funded channels, I think there was an expectation that, you know, that formula was going to work. Not that it necessarily didn't. I don't want to say any of the channels don't work. A lot of them do. But I think there was a higher expectation for those funded channels to be much, much more successful, let's say. Mm-hmm. Because, the thought process being, okay, you put the celebrity name, you get the celebrity names involved, you get the better production, and we can help with the viewership by converting that viewership from the pre-existing viewership that comes from our YouTube community. Problem is, going back to what I said before about the word quality, and if it's not what people want to view, it's not what people want to view. And it doesn't matter that it looks and feels like TV. I think they learned a lot about long-form content, and that I think long-form content is going to have a place on this space. But my opinion is that there's two really, really cool things that are happening right now. One is we're figuring out long-form. We're figuring out how to make sense of it, get the viewer. The viewership is catching up for long-form, which is going to exploit the fact that it doesn't matter where you're distributing. And we should see some ad dollars increase because mm-hmm. of that. It only makes sense. And hopefully marketing gets involved soon, because we haven't seen anything get truly marketed, not in the multi-million dollar budgets that any TV show would get.
Right.
And that's a part of the formula to make sure that's successful, so you can control that ROI.
My television shows will spend as much money on marketing as they will on the making the show.
Oh, I
and you think about
absolutely.
Everything that...
Absolutely.
That we make on YouTube,
zero.
And there is no marketing.
No, zero.
It's not that there's...
Yeah, no, and I talk about this all the time, but it's so frustrating, but also exciting, because hopefully it'll happen soon. But imagine the day when someone does spend the $40 million that one of those network television shows gets on marketing, and they put up the billboards, they put up the advertising, they put up, they get it in the magazines, because if that happens, all of a sudden, it is legitimate. You're
yeah.
paying for legitimacy.
Right.
Yeah, you've changed perception. It doesn't matter. Now it doesn't matter that it's on YouTube. I want to see what happens when you do that. I wish that YouTube would just pick even a YouTube, or pick you guys, and say, okay, let's just get some billboards up on Sunset. Let's put some real, a real marketing campaign behind this, and let it be distributed on YouTube.
What should we do in our billboard, Chester?
I think, well, this right here, we got to make that a household symbol. Because
the logo.
I love the...
Our fused heads?
Fused heads, yes.
Okay.
Well, I think we would do the business shake. If you put me and you doing the business handshake on billboards across America, I think I could start something.
Yeah. I'm in. Oh. If you guys need a CMO.
Okay. We're certainly open to that.
Yeah. Yom-Yom, is that how do you do it?
Yom-Yom-F.
Yom-Yom-F. Okay,
it's an acronym for You Offend Me, You Offend My Father, which is a Bruce Lee.
Right, right. Okay, and beyond getting that started with those guys, I know that you've been involved with, speaking of long form, what's happening with Side Effects.
Oh, yeah. That's exciting. That's really exciting because, if you know what happened with Osmosis TV and the acquisition and DreamWorks, Jeffrey Katzenberg, actually, I think he said this publicly, and I can't remember where it was found, but someone was telling me he'd actually brought up Side Effects, and he seems to be excited about it, which obviously is a good thing. And then Brian, being who Brian is, if you know Brian, he's just kind of, he truly is a pioneer in this space, and what he's done with Osmosis is amazing. So yeah, I think that we're in a really interesting opportunity here to do something that with Side Effects that might not have really been done before. Exploit what I was saying before. Maybe.
Now, it's a long-form narrative musical series, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, so here, it's a little tricky but easy to explain. It's a movie. The first thing is a movie. It's almost 2 hours of content, and we are releasing it in three acts. 1, 2, 3. So we just released the first 40 minutes of a movie. Now, it makes most sense to be a series.
Mm-hmm. Television.
Yeah, national, a 30-minute type show, I think. So by releasing it at 40 minutes, that's about almost an hour's worth of programming in the network television world. Mm-hmm. 42 is what they're... we were able to put up a comparable and say, okay, well, Side Effects, we released it 1 week, we got 2.1 million views. Well, what does MTV get on Teen Wolf? I don't think it's 2.1 million. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these network television programs are hit. That's for a lot of channels, that's a hit show if they can get to 2 million in a week. And so we have that direct comparable because of the length of time that we released it. So that was, again, I think that's a testament to how smart awesomeness TV is and what they're doing. But so now we're, you know, we just wrapped the rest of the movie. We'll release it again, and you know, we'll release Act 2 and Act 3 over the next few months. But the big picture here, I think, for everyone is where we are, you know, where our minds are is, let's make this a real show. Let's make a, you know, how many episodes are in a show like that, but let's make a Glee. Let's make the next Glee.
Now, you show up in a lot of places. I mean, you play the older brother slash father figure, basically, mm-hmm. in that story, because the dad is, that is the story, looking for the dad, basically,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you show up there, but then you're behind the scenes from a business standpoint as a, I don't know if it's a partner or whatever the word is for that, but you're involved. I mean, what's your
executive producer?
Okay, executive yeah. producer, and then you're appearing in Camp Dakota, which is coming out.
Yeah, just as an actor. Yeah.
That's just as an actor.
Just
there.
An actor. Yeah.
So, what's your strategy? I mean, show up in a number of places, get your hand in on kind of the executive producing part of it, the business side of it too. It seems like I'm interested to know what your strategy is. How would you characterize it?
We haven't even talked about what I'm actually most excited about, though,
okay.
too, in this space. So we'll get to that next.
No, give it to it. What is it? Factor it in.
Well, then, okay, then what I'm actually most excited more than anything else is actually the music industry and how the YouTube is going to play into that. And I'm in the middle of building something out for that right now. That's where a lot of my time and energy has been going, is I'm looking to start a company that revolves around making sense of distribution for music online. Given that radio has controlled their business for so long. And if radio declines, it's not really declining at the moment, but it's I think it's inevitable that it's going to have a decline at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and whether or not that's a fast decline or not, it's you still have to accept the fact that there's distribution channels or there's distribution online like YouTube where I'll give a specific example. Boyce Avenue, for instance, has, 4-something million subscribers. They have an engine that can guarantee a certain amount. Here is what I'm really, really excited about is I look at the Miley Cyruses and the Selena Gomez's and the Demi Lovato's and even the Katy Perry's now and a lot of those artists. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about the artists, but the truth is, and I know this for a fact, a lot of the songs, I already heard those songs. I have some friends that wrote their songs. I've heard those songs with demo singers before they even hit their ears, right? So I know that we call those originals. They're not originals in my mind. Those are covers. Selena's mm-hmm. covering a song. Let's be honest. Demi Lovato's covering a song. But they'll never say it that way, and they're going to get the writing credit with quotations, and they're going to play that game. And that's so that the perception is there for the kids to feel like that's Miley's song. Like that she wrote that, that's coming from her. No, usually not. Now, that being the case, what excites me about that is, so what really is the difference between when Demi sings a song, in my opinion, what I would say is a cover of someone else's song, mm-hmm. and the next day, someone with massive distribution decides to do their own version of that song and releases it. There's not a big difference. The fact that they are, quote unquote, covering it, if they're doing it online, is just public. But she went behind the scenes, grabbed somebody else's song, and did the same thing. Now,
she paid for it, though.
And here's the other thing: is the record labels also spend a six-figure amount on, radio spins, right?
Yeah.
Also playing that formula where, okay, let's just pump it into the ears of the listeners, and there's only so much radio real estate to be had. So they're really working off of a very specific business model to, you know, make sure that these songs are successful, and it costs a lot of money to do so. That's why distribution on the internet is so exciting for the music industry, because it's going to democratize music eventually. Eventually, we are going to have an option of these great hit songs that are written by these amazing songwriters that are, you know, given to Demis, but they're given to the world. And mm-hmm. anyone should be able to create a version that can be the version that is most listened to. I think we will soon see scenarios where the Boyce Avenues and the Tyler Wards and some of these great musicians that have we'll do covers quite often. You know, they're already popping into the top, you know, singer-songwriter charts, but it's just getting more and more and more because their distribution is growing and growing and growing. Imagine the day when you know, Demi releases it, the sales are so-so, they control their own distribution, which is as significant, if not more, and they beat out those numbers. Now they're sitting on top of the iTunes charts. They're finding more people than Demi. Whose song is it really?
So is it a, is it a specifically cover-oriented thing as opposed to original songs? Because that's what you're using as your example.
Yeah, I mean, because like, I wouldn't put Ed Sheeran in this conversation, or maybe another a better known singer songwriter, but you know, and there are, you know, I'm not discounting the fact that Taylor Swift and Katy Perry do write original songs, but a lot there's a huge amount of songs that are written by songwriters and then behind the scenes, you know, pitched to different the Demi camps and the Selena camps, and one of those girls picks it up or one of those artists picks it up, and they're more or less a poster child for that. And yeah. And is that the best pairing? Is Miley Cyrus the best person to sing whatever hit song she sings next that was written by somebody else? You know, odds probably not. Is she the best from a business standpoint? Maybe, with everything that's going on in her world and the amount of people, amount of eyes on her. But is that the way we want to pair the singer to a song? I don't think so. I think there's a better version of that song that should be exploited. And I think we're about to start seeing that more and more and more, which is exciting. Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, so let's bring it back to your YouTube persona for a second. As you know, as we were talking about, I would think that back in the day you had all these girlfriends. You know, you've got now with these songs that you put out, you've got, you know, you've got the young girl swooning a little bit, right? Hmm. You've got you've had some success in relationships. And you have expectations. You've got stalker yeah, girls, right?
I think so. I think I have some stalkers.
Any evidence of that? any creepy evidence?
The problem is I just want what you guys have. It's not fair. I want to settle down. I want to like...
Just marry a stalker, dude.
I want to, well...
My wife doesn't listen to this, so yeah. I can... Christy was not a stalker, but yeah. If she would have been, then I think I was the stalker.
Oh, okay.
I stalked my wife.
Oh, that's
good. I'll own that.
Yeah.
But so you haven't had any weird run-ins with fans?
No, not really. When I had a P.O. box, I had a few weird things sent to me, but...
like what? like what in unison?
I always resort to this one thing that I always remember. It was an envelope filled with dirt and tacks.
tacks? Like thumbtacks?
Yeah,
tacks?
Yeah.
Dirt and tacks?
Yeah, with no explanation either. And a box full of Star Trek, old VHS Star Trek tapes.
Were they good?
I didn't watch them, but I'm assuming they were the, you know.
They were probably dubbed over, dude. You got to watch them.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't even think about it.
It's not Star Trek.
What is this?
Okay, so maybe not with any of these females, but with, you have had success. You said you're single right now.
Yeah, I am single right now, yeah.
But you were dating Taryn for a while, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. When did you...
Oh, okay.
You're like, the eyes roll. Well,
I mean, dating another internet personality, I think that's, there haven't been a lot of relationships where there was, each person had a public persona and you keep up with their personal lives.
Was that a marketing decision?
Yeah, right.
Was that the businessman marketing?
Yeah, yeah.
Or was
this
that your heart?
Good. No, come on. I love Taryn. And I still love Taryn. I think she's just a wonderful human.
Well, and you have to play her romantic interest in Side Effects.
Yeah, yeah. Although she dumped me in life and in movie. So
okay,
yeah. But
you were like, she was like breaking up with you, and you were like, wait, is this
real?
Is this on script?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Are we rehearsing?
Yeah, no, it just didn't work out. And
but let's start with. How long did you guys date?
I don't know. We had that rocky ending where you go off and on and off and on, and I probably I'm a big part of why that didn't work out, to be honest. But anyway.
Now our point of reference is the VidCon performance.
Yeah.
Where
you saw that, huh?
Yeah, we were out there.
We were there. We were in the crowd.
So what was the name of the song you were performing?
Who Am I to Stand in Your Way?
Who Am I to Stand in Your Way? And you gave this introduction. And I was like, wow, this is, hold on, this is going somewhere. I'm kind of perking up. I'm listening. There was kind of a heartfelt introduction to this song about a girl you had lost. You didn't mention anyone.
Yeah.
I assumed that this was Taryn you were talking about.
Taryn.
And then it was, you started breaking up. And
yeah.
I'm like, is this, you know, okay. So I'm like, okay, is Chester a master performer?
Yeah.
Or is he crying up there?
Yeah, I was a little bit of the crying up there.
Okay.
Well, I had that,
those are real tears.
Listen, I was sitting next to my wife, and I had to monitor my wife at that moment when in the middle of you singing that song.
No way.
I look over there, and my wife is like fixated. I'm like, hey, baby, hold on. I'm right here. I'm like, I know he's a good looking guy. He's got a great voice, but come on now.
What was going on? tell me what was going on up there.
I hadn't seen her in so long. She was there, not listening, but at VidCon, and I'd bumped into her for the first time in a while.
Since the breakup, basically?
I'm a baby, and I'm trying to deal with a breakup in certain different ways, and maybe we won't talk at all. Let's do that and see if that helps. It's all me, the issue. Trust me, she's great. But I got to give Taryn this. I mean, she really, like, was very good at being there for me in the breakup, if that makes any sense. Like, she's very... She's one of the most rational people I know, and I like to pride myself on being rational too. But she helped make that as easy as possible. So if I was like, I can't talk to you for a while because it's too hard, and, you know, she, you know, respected that, and or if I needed to talk to her, she'd be fine with that too. But again, obviously, I'm the baby in this breakup for sure. Yeah.
So it fueled.
I'm cured now, though.
I
am cured. I am 100%. Good. I'm good. And it's because of that crush thing I said earlier.
So you're writing songs about a new person now?
Yeah, I already wrote a song about this new person, yeah.
What's her name?
Stephanie Stannis. No.
Stephanie Stannis.
I can't say her name.
She sent me some Star Trek
tapes.
Say her
name. Yeah.
But okay, you can't say her name, but have you released a song yet that is about her?
Yeah, no, here's the thing. Nothing's going to happen with this girl. Nothing's going to happen with this girl. It was just not
unless you tell us who she is, and we can help you out.
Yeah.
Nah, it's not.
We'll make some
nothing
calls.
Will happen to this girl. There's very concrete. There's a lot of reasons why this will not work, which is fine.
One is her husband.
One is her husband. It's like I'm like, you think I should just go for it anyway? If she's got a husband, you guys are like, you know what? Yeah, if your heart, it's your wife. Yeah, but the point is this. I don't even care. I mean, I would love a scenario. This girl is so cool. She's so cool. No, she's amazing. She's awesome. But the fact that I actually could even feel something like that again, you know, I can be aware of people being cool, but to actually have a feeling, be like, oh my God, you're making me feel that thing that is never explained properly by anyone. That was the first time since Taryn. And even though nothing will happen with this girl, it's just nice to feel that.
I have to know why you're saying nothing will happen. Is she married?
No, she's not married, but...
she's in a relationship.
I can't talk about
with somebody else. you're already talking about it.
Yeah, you both know her.
Oh, that's... Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm just like thinking really, I'm so bad at this. I'm really good at like pushing people to talk about things,
yeah.
But I'm so, I would never
matter.
See it.
But you know, but here's the thing, and this is where it's great.
Let's ask yes or no questions. Let's play that game.
Oh, I cannot leak the, because.
I can't. Is she taller than you?
Yeah. I
no.
This is like the game of guess.
So she's shorter.
Does she wear glasses?
She's shorter than you.
I can't give out any more details because you know her, and don't want her to know. I really want this to wash over and get back to her content with friends and be happy that we're friends. And again, I'm just excited that I felt something. Does that make any sense? I sound like a cheesy
dork. It's not
as,
okay, yeah, so there's, okay, even if it's not about her, it's about your feelings for her.
Yeah, no, but it's this sounds
that
absolutely
you can
ridiculous.
Have those feelings.
Yeah.
I get that.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, I'm a little like, ah, oh, that sucks. There's nothing more will happen. However, the fact that I could even get there, because after Taryn, I was for the longest time, I was just kind of like, I was like, nothing. I wanted her. I just wanted her back. Mm-hmm. And
is she a man?
yeah. Yeah, so
it's like I'm not even going to participate, Link. If you're going to keep being this way, I'm never going to speak to you again. So we're going to have one of those relationships where we can't talk anymore because I'm being so awkward about
or
this.
Or you could just stop now.
I promise.
That's why I'm here.
I'm
that's where there's two
now.
Of us, so the conversation can continue.
The last one was just a joke. Yeah. I mean, unless you want to date guys.
But the interesting thing is that you have you use the breakup. It fueled your creativity. You know, you wrote an amazing song about it.
I think like eight.
Okay. Eight amazing songs.
Seven or eight songs. Yeah.
Is that how you, I mean, and now you're writing a song about this new crush. So do you ever write a song that isn't true? You know, it's just like.
Yes, but I don't like those nearly as much as those take longer to write. Those are from writing sessions with guys or people, whoever, writers. And those are a little more contrived, and you can feel it usually. The songs that come from something, you know, you can pump those. I at least can pump those out. Mm-hmm. They kind of just spill onto the page. And yeah. So, yes, I do write songs that are not about something, but I'd say the majority of my music is all from real things. Yeah. Hmm.
And what's next? What's on the horizon? I know you've got by the time this is out, Camp Dakota will have been released to the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm in my boxers for a lot of that movie. Most of my screen time is in my boxers in that movie. The funny is, I'm really, really good friends with Chris Rydell and Nick Rydell. I've known them since middle school.
Oh, really?
I've known them since seventh grade, even though Chris always says sixth, and I get really upset because I'm like, I didn't know you in sixth grade. And anyway, every single time, like, you can't remember. Anyway.
Do you put tape on the inside of the boxers to make sure that it, like, the hole doesn't open up?
No, because be
that's what I would
that'd
do.
Be funny. You know what I love about being a little older? You did this happen for you guys too? Like, oh no, I hope I never get seen naked. And then it really is that like old man locker mentality. I just don't care. I really like, if something, if a flap opened up, it would be funny to me.
It would be embarrassing for the person
for
who
them.
Saw it.
Yeah. But I would be like, that's my penis. And I'm looking
at it right now. There he is.
Yeah, somewhere recently that happened. I was like, all right, that is an old guy thing. Old guys don't care.
You lose your shame.
Yeah, you do. You just forget about it.
That's funny.
What was the question? Oh, what's coming up next?
And then more side effects. And then what about
producing a movie? Actually, producing a movie in the next few months. We're gonna get started. I don't know if I'm allowed to say who the director is yet. So I won't, just in case.
Is he taller than you?
You know him.
Are you dating him? Do you have a crush on him?
Yeah, exactly. Is he taller than you? He's such a great guy. And no. But the movie's really, really cool. The movie's really cool. And it's, think of it as, this is the end for the YouTube community. And
very cool.
We got a pretty good budget and, a lot of the same Cash is involved, and Mark Steinle and John Strauss are involved. Those guys wrote something about Mary. And again, I don't know if I can list the other players, but I'm sure we'll have an announcement in the next month or two.
Okay. And we're talking YouTube release here?
I think this is it's kind of the same thing that we're doing with Side Effects or Camp Dakota, what they're doing with, you make a good-looking feature film, and then you play the distribution game afterwards. You figure out, there's opportunity. You don't have to have a distribution plan necessarily, before you finish the movie, because there'll be opportunities.
Right. Well, we're excited to see that and everything else that's coming down the pipe.
Yeah. Yeah, and let us know when Miss Standen reaches out to you.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you.
We're going on a triple date.
Let's do it.
And there you see it. I tried to make a pun about with his last name, but then I realized that you're not seeing anything. You're just hearing that ear biscuit with Chester C. Lionel, as I'm going to call him from now on.
Yeah. What a missed opportunity. If my middle name was Lionel, you better believe it. That would be what I would be going by.
I seriously considered naming one of my children Lionel because it starts with an L, and that's what we did with our children. We named them with L names.
It is interesting that I mean, Lando is a great name, but was it you that made that decision, or was it your wife that was like, no, Lionels, we're not going to do that? Or were you just like, oh, it just seems too jokey? Or
I preferred Lando.
You preferred? Well, don't tell Lionel that. We're never going to get Lionel on this thing if you tell him that you preferred Lando to Lionel.
That's true.
You should probably retract that immediately. Sir, would you like to retract that?
Yes, I would like to retract that.
I do have to say that, you know, I had to pull you back today. I had to pull you back from, you were really, really pushing to get him to confess his crush. I think you made him feel uncomfortable. I think you might have to call him and apologize.
Well, I'm willing to do that. I mean, when you've been married for 13 years, you lose a sensitivity.
Who you got a crush on, boy? Now, you tell me.
to this whole crush thing. I mean, it's like, well, if you like somebody, just say it. You know what? If you want to, you know what? I'm so far removed from that I just think it's just fun. It was just in good, honest fun. I wasn't trying to push him. I just thought it was fun, and maybe I should have been a little more sensitive.
What I'm saying is that...
Did I push him too far?
I'm just saying...
On the crush thing? He brought it up.
Well, okay.
He seemed to want me tease it out of him.
No. Okay, so that's the thing. I guess that's the question that beneath the question is, did you really think, like, what did you think the chances? Because, like, when I'm observing this happen, and I know that there is a 0% chance that he's going to give it up. So, but in your mind, are you thinking, oh, I'm just having fun. I'll see where this goes. I know he's not going to tell me who his crush is on. Or do you really think that there's a chance that he's going to just break down and tell
you?
What motivates you in that moment?
I'm having fun. Two, I feel like I...
One, I'm having fun.
Two, I feel like I owe it to... Ear Biscuit listeners to try as hard as I can. If someone says, well, I will say things have changed because I do have a crush now, .. I owe it to the listeners, Rhett, to see...
The Biscuiteers?
To see what the .. can reveal.
And I agree with that. And I believe that you should have asked him twice. You asked him... I don't know. I'm going to go back to the tape. Eight to ten times, maybe a dozen. So I just at one point I was like, okay, he's obviously not going to go there. You know, we pushed him, and then I felt like I had to pull you back. It was like pulling back a dog, like a drug dog that's found the drugs. You're like, oh no, it's cool. We know that they're in there. We're going to take care of it now. We're gonna give you your little reward, but you know, you don't get to actually get the drugs in your mouth.
Chester Lionel C, I'm sorry for pushing you so hard. I mean, I actually apologized to him once we stopped recording. I said, hey man, you know, I hope you'll forgive me for I didn't speak English, first of all. I said, I hope you'll forgive me for making you squirm a little bit, but and I don't remember what I said. I'm sorry. I wasn't
well, Now you,
it's
you've
all
made it.
It's all in good fun.
Now you've made it public.
One, I had fun. Two, I no.
okay, well,
we're still friends. He didn't leave upset.
No, he didn't. He hugged us. Hugged us both.
I'm a little upset. I don't know who his crush is.
Yeah, well,
I'm freaking upset.
Well, I know who it is.
Who is it?
I'm gonna keep it to myself.
You think you know who it is?
No. When he hugged me at the end, he whispered into my ear.
No, you think you know who it is?
Like,
huh?
Don't tell Link.
Who do you think it is, Brett?
I'm not gonna say. You can't. And you're not. You can ask me 12 times, and I'm still not gonna tell you.
Are they taller than you?
Taller than me?
Is she taller than you?
Yeah, this woman is 6'8".
Yeah, that would narrow it down. What if he would have said that? I'm not going to tell you who it is, but she's taller than Rhett. All right, guys, thanks for listening to this Ear Biscuit. We're in this together, and we do this every week. I don't care what year it is. I resolve to be here for you and to do these until we stop doing them.
And for those of you who are listening...
You're going to leave before I leave, is all I'm going to say.
And for those of you who are listening in the distant future, the year 3003, almost a whole millennium from now.
Wow.
Just in case that happens. Just in case you're in the year 3003 and you're listening to this. It's like, wow, don't we sound weird?
Hello. Hey.
This is what we talked like.
Hey, future people.
This is what English sounded like. And we're glad that you listened.
That is what this is. I mean, like we said at the beginning, the inception of this was, it's a time capsule of these interesting people from the internet at this particularly interesting point in entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's encapsulated for the people of 3003.
Yeah, because the world ends in 3004. Everybody knows that.